Welcome to Business Innovators Radio, featuring industry influencers and trendsetters sharing proven strategies to help you build a better life right now.
Welcome to Brilliance Business TV, conversations with leading experts in business. I am your host, Mark Stephen Pooler. We have a wonderful guest on the show today, Dr. John D. Martini. I'm a big follower of Dr. John. I was a big fan of The Secret movie and book, which he was a star of, but also his work around human behavior is incredible. And our topic today is stepping into the best version of yourself. And who doesn't want to step in to the best version of themselves? We are streaming live on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. We're also on the E360 TV network under Fresh Takes, going out to Apple TV, Fire TV, Android, Roku, and many more. We're also on MSPNewsGlobal.com and Business Innovators Radio Network. And our new hosts that we are also on is USA Global Radio and TV Network. After that big mouthful, let's bring in our incredible guest, Dr. John D. Martini. Hey, Dr. John, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to our interview.
Well, as I mentioned, Dr. John, I am such a big fan of The Secret, even today. But the world has just changed so much since that movie. You have been on an incredible journey of really supporting and helping people to step into the best version of themselves. So I'm really, really looking forward to a great conversation with you today.
Thank you.
So my first question, what I want to get into around our topic, what word of wisdom do you have for anyone wanting to step in to the best version of themselves?
Instead of comparing ourselves to other people and putting people on pedestals or in pits, it's wiser to compare our daily actions to what we know is most deeply meaningful, most inspiring, and most truly of highest value in our life. Whenever we're living by our highest values, we are most authentic. We raise our self-worth. We expand our space and time horizons. We become more effective and efficient, more objective, less subjectively biased, less judging, less empty, more fulfilled. And there's no more magnificence than our authentic self. And giving ourselves permission to doing that and not trying to be somebody we're not with an imposter liberates us from the baggage we carry around when we try. By putting people on pedestals, we'll minimize ourselves. By putting people in pits, we'll exaggerate ourselves. And when we exaggerate or minimize ourselves, we're not being ourselves. And there's nothing greater than being true to ourselves. We want to be loved and appreciated for who we are. When we're being who we are, we get loved and appreciated. And that occurs. That's also when we exaggerate ourselves, we get narcissistic and project our values onto others and expect them to live in our values, which is partly futility. When we become minimizing ourselves, we become altruistic and sacrifice for others, which neither one of them are sustainable. But when we're being ourselves, we have the most sustainability, the most fair exchange, the most profitability, the most viability, and the most fulfillment in relationship dynamics. So the most significant thing we do is not compare ourselves with others, but to compare our daily actions to our highest values and stick to priority. If we fill our day with the highest priority actions, it won't fill up with low priority distractions that undermine our power.
Yes. It's so easy to compare ourselves to others, John, but the thing is, there's always going to be someone that you perceive as better than you. And I had to learn that myself as well and really start to appreciate my own values and what I have got to offer, because it's so easy to put other people above you. But what I learned from you as well, and I did do this exercise, you mentioned the word narcissistic. It's quite easy to label people as narcissists or psychopaths. And I got into a habit of doing that at one point in my life. And I thought to myself, actually, I'm going to do an exercise, what John does. So I thought of all the times when I had these traits myself, to balance it out. And it's so easy to judge other people, but you really do have to look at what you're judging in others and recognize it in yourself. And what I like about your work, you really put the balance into things, that we're all good, we're all bad, we're all evil, we're all saints. And I really do love that about your work, John, because too many times in the personal development space, people just want to focus on the positives. And I found when I did that, my mind would really fight me and give me intrusive thoughts, or it was like my body showing me negative, because I think it's not healthy just trying to see positives. Do you agree with that?
Yes. The pursuit of a monopole is what gives rise to bipolar condition. We end up, the more we try to get at one-sidedness, the more we divide our life up. The Buddha said, was at least quoted as saying, that the desire for that which is unobtainable and the desire to avoid that which is unavoidable is the source of human suffering. And I went through the Oxford Dictionary 39 years ago, and I went and underlined every possible human behavioral trait that you could discover in that dictionary, which is 4,628 traits. And I found that I had every single one of them. I wrote a name of who is the most extreme example of that behavior. And then I identified who it is that I think is the most extreme of that behavior. And then I looked at myself and I go, where and when do I display that behavior? And I'd write down where it was, when it was, to whom it was, and who perceived me that way, until I was equal to the most extreme example. And I found out that I had every trait: nice, mean, kind, cruel, honest, dishonest, you know, every trait, considered, inconsiderate, peaceful, wrathful. And then I realized I'm not here to get rid of half of myself. Every side was useful. And many people think, well, I want to get rid of half of myself to love myself. You'll never get there. If you try to get rid of half of others, half of you, and half the world, you'll be spending your time on futility instead of embracing the whole. And the magnificence of who we really are in totality is essential. I'm not a nice person. I'm not a mean person. I'm an individual with a set of values. When you do things that support my values, I'm nice as a pussycat. When you do things that challenge my values, I can be mean as a tiger. And I need both sides. That's why I have both sides. And there's nothing to... If there's any part of us that needed to be gotten rid of, it would have gone extinct if it didn't serve. But if it's here, it must serve. So our job is to find out how does it all serve, so we can love people for their wholeness, not try to get rid of half of them all the time, which doesn't work. So I just learned to love works more effectively than judgment.
I love that. And I think it's liberating when you recognize it in yourself, because you become less inclined to judge others and label others so quickly. And it's such a thing in the world for people to put labels on people without recognizing that you have all of these things in yourself too. So I found it really liberating doing that, John.
Yes. Well, the people that you admired, the only reason you admire them is because they're reminding you of a part of yourself that you already have. It's not missing, that you're not honoring, because you're expecting it to be in the same form they have it in. But in reality, you have it in your own form that aligns with your own values, that are more authentic to you, but you're not honoring it because you're comparing it to them. And putting them on a pedestal is not going to get you empowered. It's going to actually minimize you and hold you back from honoring the magnificence of what you're contributing. And the same thing when you resent people. You only resent things on the outside that represent part of you you feel ashamed of, that you're dissociating from with pride to cover it up, to try to pretend you're too proud to admit what you have in them, inside you. But the truth is, you have it all. And you don't need to get rid of it. It's something to just honor and respect, because there's a time. You know, when I go to the airport and I check in and they say, well, Dr. DeMartini, you have so many miles, we've upgraded you and we put you in the first class lounge and da 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 da, I'm as nice as a pussycat. Oh, thank you very much.
I would be too.
Yeah. But if all of a sudden they say, well, somehow, even though you've got 20 million miles with our airline, even though you've been flying with us as more than any other human being on the planet, somehow we've messed up and there's no way you can get on this flight today. And the next time is about a week from now. And sorry about that, unless you want to go economy next week. And I don't just go, I sit there and go, may I speak to your supervisor? The supervisor come out. Can I get Richard Branson out here on the floor right now, the owner of the company? I try nice, mean, kind, cruel. I learned from Eddie Murphy in 24 hours or whatever, 48 hours or something. You know, sometimes you need to play tough. Just like with your kids, you can't be always nice. You're going to be nice and tough, and you're going to play both sides with them. And so I'm all the above. I quit half of myself about age 30. But for the first 30 years of my life, from 18 to 30, I tried to be only one side. I found that I was a moral hypocrite, and I was basically walking on eggshells all my life, worrying about somebody finding out that I had another side, that I gave that up at age 30 and said, realize I have all the above and I need all the above. And frankly, I got things accomplished with both sides. So I don't, I'm not a promoter of one-sidedness. I'm a promoter of a whole, wholesome, holistic view of a human being so they can understand both sides. A balanced orientation.
I find it doesn't work either, John, when you're trying to be one-sided. I don't think your mind allows it. I think it throws up too many negatives because
your intuition. Your intuition is pointing it out. If you're infatuated with somebody and you put them on a pedestal and you're conscious of their upsides and unconscious of their downsides, your intuition is trying to whisper to you, too good to be true, watch out, be careful, don't be gullible. It's whispering to you. And if you're resentful to somebody and there's something that they've done that's challenged you, your intuition is trying to point out the upsides. So there must be a purpose to this. Must be a reason why this is happening. There must be some value that I'm overlooking. Our intuition is constantly trying to take the ignored, unconscious part of our perceptions, and we're subjectively biased, and try to make us subjectively truthful by seeing both sides so we can be mindful instead of mindless. And it's assisting us in being inspired by our life if we know how to ask the right questions and honor it. But if we try to hold on to moral hypocrisies and idealisms, it was the Nobel Prize winner, Dirac, who said, it's not that we don't know so much. We know so much that isn't so. We've been indoctrinated from sometimes politicians and religious leaders or whatever about how to be one-sided, you know, be kind, don't be cruel, be nice, don't be mean, that we've lost sight that that's hypocritical. No human being is living that way. And I think that's wise to be able to embrace both sides of our life and love people for both sides. If you're in a relationship and you're not allowing them to be both-sided, they won't feel loved. They want to be loved for both sides, all of them. I want to be loved for both sides too. Sometimes I'm nice, sometimes I'm mean. I still want to be loved.
Yes, and I think that's a great way to make relationships work out better. And sometimes it's so easy as well to see yourself as a victim and someone else as a perpetrator. And I don't think that's healthy either. I think we have to take responsibility for how we're showing up and see ourselves as a creator. And like you say, keep things balanced in your mind.
Yeah, I think it was Epictetus. If you look up Epictetus and look under the word blame, he said, first, we have false attribution biases. We blame others for what we've done. Or we blame ourselves for what we've done. And so he says, first, you start out with blame on your journey. And then you eventually realize you blame others first. Then you blame yourself. And then you realize there's nothing there to blame. It's just something there to discover the magnificence to. I mean, if you look back in our life, we have events that we think are terrible. And then a day, a week, a month, 5 years later or something, we find out, wow, thank God that occurred. I'm so grateful that occurred. And then you go, well, I could have had the wisdom of the ages without the aging process if I'd looked right away. But no, it took me 5 years before I finally saw how that served me. Well, I believe that everything has the capacity to be on the way, not in the way. And so taking the time to ask, so when this has happened, how is it helping me fulfill my mission on earth? How has it helped me fulfill what's most meaningful? How's it helping me accomplish what's my primary aim in life? If you ask that question, no matter what happens, it's on the way and you build up momentum. You become unstoppable.
I see the world a bit more like that now. Things are happening for me and not to me. What, exactly. What obstacles or challenges may individuals face when working on self-improvement and stepping into the best versions of themselves, John?
Well, the pursuit of self-improvement, actually, is the first obstacle. When they realize there's nothing there they need to fix, yes, and they wake up to the magnificence of who they are, they realize that that moral hypocrisy of trying to be better compared to what? You know, we only make a mistake in our minds when we compare our actions to somebody else's values or some tradition, convention, or moral construct out there that's somebody else incorporated, injected into our life. We don't make mistakes in our own values. We only think we make mistakes when we're attempting to live in somebody else's. And we only think other people make mistakes when we project our values onto them and think they're supposed to live in our values. But people don't make mistakes in their own values because they're evaluating things through their values. So I basically help them see that we're not here. When you're hiring somebody in a company, if you hire somebody that's disengaged, that can't see how the job description is helping them fulfill what's most meaningful to them, and then they are not really inspired and intrinsically driven to act, don't look at them as if there's something wrong with them. Look at yourself and who hired them. That's what Drucker said, because you hired somebody that's a round peg in a square hole. It doesn't match. What matches is finding somebody that really absolutely is inspired to do that job and then free it up. And then they'll do a greater job than you can do, and you'll be grateful for their contribution. But you've hired somebody that you forced them into doing something that's not really inspiring to them. It's not in line with their values. And then they're going, then you think, well, they're making mistakes and there's something wrong with them. Then you have a false projected label onto them, a false attribution bias. I'm a firm believer in honoring people for who they are, and who they are is a reflection of what they value most. And the same thing for our own life. And stop being somebody you're not. Allow yourself to identify the core competency and stick to your core competency and delegate the rest away. I'm good at teaching and writing. I'm useless. I haven't driven a car in 33 years plus. I haven't cooked since I was 24. I'm 69 now. So everything that is not inspiring to me that I have to have any form of incentive, motivation, or reminder to do, I delegate to other people who would love to do it and stick to what I love doing. Teach, research, write, and travel. That's it. I don't do anything else. I'm useless everywhere else.
I like that, delegating out, and they're happy to do it because that's what they're passionate about as well. And I really like your take on things, John. I think it's really refreshing to perceive the world this way. And it kind of takes so much responsibility away from you, guilt, and really to see things in the best possible way, which is so much more balanced than just seeing one-sided things. What is the best way to balance the positive and the negative thoughts that individuals face when looking to improve their mindset and step into the best version of themselves?
Well, way back many years ago, I would be in my practice and I'd have let's say I have this big day. I saw a lot of patients, made a lot of income, a lot of people saying, "You're amazing, you're a great doctor, da-da-da-da-da." And I'd start letting it get to my head and I'd puff myself up and get a little bit arrogant. And then I would drive home, you know, puffed up and like a chicken or something. And then I come home and my wife would nail me. She'd say, "You know, you forgot to do this. You didn't do this, something else," and just deflate it. At first, and when I was really ignorant, I thought, well, I've got a toxic wife. She doesn't realize that I'm the king and I'm amazing and da, 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 da. And what she was doing is taking me off the pedestal, because when I'm on this pedestal and cockily proud, I'm exaggerating myself and not actually thinking about my customer. I'm thinking about me. I've lost track of what my purpose in the business was. So I noticed I got nailed. And then if I had a really down day and I thought, "Oh God, what a day." Then I noticed that she would massage my shoulders and lift me up and build me up. And I thought, "This is crazy. If I'm down, she supports me. If I'm up, she knocks me down." But what she was doing is getting me authentic. When I was puffed up, she was bringing me down. When I was down, she's lifting me up. She's bringing me into the authenticity. But I didn't see that at first because I was addicted to the idea of only be positive, only be supportive. So what I did is I started to govern myself. When I had this cocky day and I thought, "Wow, I'm amazing," and puffed up, right? Like a rooster or something, I started asking questions. What patient's name did I overlook today? What staff member did I not thank? What procedure did I not do as thoroughly as I could? What checklist did I overlook? And I would humble myself back down. And at the end of the day, it would calm me down when I looked at the facts and we're not looking at. And I wouldn't stop until I got a tear of gratitude for the opportunity to be of service to people. When I came home, I had an amazingly balanced, loving wife. It was amazing. The moment I was centered, she was centered. And we had a stable dynamic. And if I had a day that I felt down, whose anniversary did I remember? Who did I thank today? What procedure did I do? I asked the opposite questions. So I had 30 questions that I would not go home until I asked those questions, made sure I was centered. And when I was centered, my business was more stable and the trajectory was more consistent. My relationship was more stable. And I was not puffing myself up and getting narcissistic and putting false expectations on people, or beating myself up, getting altruistic and sacrificing because of insecurity. I was stable and maintained a sustainable, fair exchange with myself and the loved ones and my staff and my customers. Whew, that was worth knowing. If you don't govern yourself, the world around you kicks your butt until you govern yourself. Everything is a feedback to get you authentic. And a self-governed individual is an authentic individual where they maximize their potential. That's the, quote, greatest you.
You said that really beautifully, actually. And I was just thinking to mention that, actually. So rather than you trying to change the way your wife was treating you or anything like that, or people around you, you went inwards and changed the way you were seeing yourself, perceiving yourself, the way you were showing up. And then the people around you reflected the change in you. And they do say the world is a mirror, don't they, John?
Yeah, well, yeah, they say when you love people for who they are, they turn into who you love. And if you actually stop and look at what you're doing, because when you get cocky and self-righteous and put people down and judge, you feel empty because you're too proud to admit what you see in others inside you, and you're disowning parts, and the disowned parts feel empty. And you're not really looking and reflecting, and you're alienating people with your narcissistic idea that I deserve and they don't. And the same thing on the other side. You'll sacrifice your profit margins in business if you give away everything because you're insecure. So putting yourself on a pedestal or pit, or putting others on a pedestal or pit, never has worked and won't work. And that's been talked about as far as we can trace back 2,000, 3,000 years that's been known. So it's just a good reminder sometime to have pure reflective awareness. True love and intimacy is pure reflective awareness, where we realize that what we see in others, we've got. I've shown and proven to people in relationship dynamics, when two people are arguing and they're fighting and they're not wanting to talk to each other and they're married, I say, what specific trait, action, or inaction do you perceive this individual displaying or demonstrating that you despise most? And they go, well, he did this and he did that. Okay, good. And what is it over on your side? Well, she did this and she did that. I said, great. Now write that down. Now go to a moment where and when you perceive yourself displaying or demonstrating that same specific trait, action, or inaction. Well, I pride myself on never being that way. I didn't ask that question. That's a defense. I said, just go and ask, where have you done it? Because we have all the traits. There's no traits missing. And any trait you're disowning is a trait that people will keep running your life with. So go and look. And then they look. And they go, And they both humble themselves a bit because they're both right. And when you make the other person wrong, it doesn't get anywhere. It's a stalemate. So they go in there and they start looking at where they've done it. And I say, keep going until you can see that what you perceive in them is 100% equal quantitatively and qualitatively in you. And they just keep going and keep going and keep going. And all of a sudden they're brought to tears. And they go, wow, you're reminding me of the thing I'm judging in myself. And you're brought into my life to help me learn to love that. That's why we're in this relationship. See, people look in the idea, I want happiness in relationship, but the purpose of relationship is to help you become authentic, where you have fulfillment, not hedonistic, immediate gratifying happiness, which are transient at best and misleading, and many times the very cause of the pains in the future, because you keep comparing yourself to that high and life's not matching that high, and then you get addicted to a fantasy, and then life's a nightmare.
So you're kind of setting yourself up for the good, the bad, the everything in between. I love that, John, and I think it is a great way to approach relationships. And I think a lot more dating coaches and things like that should talk about some of these concepts, Sir Dr. John, as well. I really do.
Well, I saw a woman on Instagram that I was just trying to find somebody on Instagram the other day, and I saw this girl on Instagram that was training her husband on how to be what the woman fantasized. And, you know, it sounded ideal. It looked ideal, but eventually that guy's going to eventually growl. You know, he's sacrificing himself for this girl and feeding her fantasies instead of actually helping her grow. And I think that's what misleads a lot of people in relationship. You're feeding the fantasies instead of actually growing up, maturing.
I have to admit, I get a little bit annoyed. I have to be careful what I'm scrolling sometimes because I don't like things going into my mind either as well. I'm very careful what I put into my mind. But just the whole dating thing and people talking about narcissists, and I just think that's putting yourself as a victim. I think if you're the best version of yourself and have these great beliefs, you wouldn't see yourself a victim and attract that kind of behavior, and obviously taking responsibility for what's in yourself as well. I think it can be quite toxic with some of the messages that are going around on dating and things to do with narcissism. I don't like the whole concepts of all of those things.
It's a wounded individual projecting their wounds onto society and then drawing in other wounded people to abide by it with a false compassion. And I think that that's misleading. I agree. It's a little bit misleading. I realize that in relationship, no matter what you're looking for, look for it and its opposite, and that's what you get.
Yes. And also, I'm not judging anyone. Also, I'm not judging anyone if they are in that situation either, because I have only come to this realization myself over the last couple of years. I also have been in a victim mindset and thought I was being abused by a narcissist. And looking back now, I realize it was me projecting out all of my insecurities and everything. So I'm not judging anyone out there if they're in that position either.
As long as we're addicted to support, we're going to keep getting challenge. As long as we're addicted to protection, we get aggression. Whatever we get addicted to, which keeps us juvenile dependent, we attract its opposite to break us free from the juvenile dependency to grow up. And it's that challenge that makes us precociously independent and makes the entrepreneur. It's not the support. You know, I got a gentleman who is a very wealthy billionaire. He's got a son that's never had a job in his life. He's never had to work. He's never had a thing. And the billionaire is sitting there going, you know, he can't seem to stand on his own two feet. I said, well, you've rescued him a whole life. What do you expect? You've never given him any challenge. You've been over-supportive and protective, and he's assuming that you're going to die and he's going to get all the money. So he has no reason to do anything except party and play. He's going to be a little boy all of his life. And he's going, well, wow. And he says, well, how do I wean him? I said, do you have the courage to do it? Are you willing to be ridiculed and disliked temporarily to make them grow up? You know, this is a real interesting challenge for some people. But it takes the balance of support and challenge. Love is a balance of support and challenge, peace and war. In fact, all complementary opposites is what makes up love. And when people realize that true love is embracing whatever's needed, both sides of the equation, kind, cruel, nice, mean, positive, negative, support, challenge, you know, stingy, generous, finding that balance and that zen, you know, middle ground, or that Taoist approach to the synthesis, this is the one that has always stood the test of time that actually makes a stable individual.
I have to agree totally. Dr. John, I thoroughly enjoyed a conversation with you today. I do want to ask you one more question. Firstly, are you still on your ship?
I'm on my ship right now. I'm in Ulvik, Norway right now. We sailed in here yesterday morning and we're here till this evening. And I'm here with my team, and I go from another place. We're going around Norway, and then we're going over to the Faroe Islands, over to Iceland, and then we're doing an expedition in Greenland. I'm going to take everybody on an expedition here.
I like the sound of that. So my last question, Dr. John, what's new for Dr. John? What are you working on right now and what's up and coming?
Well, since we've chatted, I've been busy writing away and doing things. We've got a new movie that just came out called Inside Effect on the power of our own healing power from within. We've got another movie coming out in November, another one in December. And I've done about 4 or 5 books since we've chatted. So we've got the productivity factor, how to do twice as much in half the time, the essentials of emotional intelligence. We've got another one called Resilient Mind. And so we've got that, and I've got a book on neurology coming out. So I've been working away. I love it. I'm speaking, researching, writing, and doing what I love doing and traveling.
You mentioned healing as well, Dr. John, and I've discovered this incredible thing. It's called TRAE, Trauma Release Exercises. It's absolutely incredible. You do like this exercise and it does something to a muscle. I can't remember the name of the muscle, but you know how dogs shake when they're scared? That's releasing trauma. Well, humans have this ability as well. And you do this exercise and it does something to the muscle and you naturally shake like that. And what that is doing is releasing all trauma that is stored in the body. I have never done anything like it. I was in my head a little bit, and what it's done, it's brought me back into my body. It's like brought me back into my body so I can observe my mind rather than being totally in my head. But the great thing is with this healing, you don't have to go into your mind or talk about anything. It's just literally getting the natural tremor of the body, what you naturally was born to do. But as children, when your parents hug you, when you're shaking, you lose that ability to shake off trauma. And these exercises get that back into the body.
It's incredible.
TRAE. Trauma release exercises. I have never found something so powerful for bringing you back into balance. It's incredible.
Okay. I'll look it up.
So, Dr. John, share with our audience how people can connect with you and why they should connect with you. What have you got going for them?
Well, if anybody would like to reach me, going to drdmartini.com, that website. On there, you can go and do evaluation on what's really, really, really priority to you, your values, which is a gold mine. If you like to do it, it's free, it's complimentary, it's private. And they can just go and browse the Dr. DeMartini show, or they can go and go look through the media section. There's radio, television, newspapers, magazines. There's all kind of articles and information on there. It's an educational website, so people can probably stay on there for the rest of their life. There's so much on there.
Yes, you have an incredible website with lots of value, Dr. John. Dr. John, thank you so much for being my guest today. I would encourage everyone to go to drdmartini.com. That's drdmartini.com. Thank you so much for being my guest today. I thoroughly enjoyed having a conversation with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be with you again.
The pleasure's been all mine. Thank you, everyone, for joining.
Thanks for listening to Business Innovators Radio. To hear all episodes featuring leading industry influencers and trendsetters, visit us online at businessinnovatorsradio.com today.